thank you for choosing this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. Hello to our regular listeners and to those who are tuning in for the first time. Many thanks for sharing some of your valuable time with us. If you have comments, questions, or topics you think we should tackle, please let us know. Contact details are with the notes that accompany this podcast on Audioboom. This episode is about a topic that's hard to escape at the moment, AI and machine learning, and is the second that we're doing in a very short series about that. It's just in the news so much at the moment, we feel like we should be exploring some of the issues around it. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst at the ISF, and this podcast is going to be more concerned with the threats posed by AI and ML. The first one was about the future of the technology, and we speculated about how it might develop. Now we want to try and understand how AI and ML may threaten organizations in the way that they use these technologies, or the way that the bad guys use them, or just, you know, generally how they might change the world in which we live. There's some big topics here. But to discuss them, I've got a great group of people here who definitely know their way around AI threats and organizations. The first is Rob McGregor, who works in cyber threat operations at WC. Hello, Rob. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Nice to talk to you today.
Yeah, thanks for your time. Big question to start things. Do you feel threatened by AI and machine learning?
I'm going to take the standard the cop out there on yes and no. I think it has potential to be quite threatening. I'm not sure it's there yet, but I think we're going to talk more about that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it'd be great to. There's a lot of speculation and fear, I think, around AI, and hopefully we won't be adding to that, but you never know. We might come up with some dangerous threat scenarios. Also here is ISF principal analyst Richard Absalom, who is lead author on a recent ISF paper about AI that gave the technology a thorough go over. A great read. By all means, download that from ISF Live. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Mark. Nice to be here again.
Good to have you here. A lot has changed since you wrote that paper, even though it was only a few years ago. So are you more or less worried about AI since then?
Personally, more worried, especially long term. I think it's definitely coming for my job. Probably about the same level of worry for everyone else in general. I think that, yeah, we wrote the paper, I was looking back at earlier, but back in 2019, and it was kind of a level set of this is what we think AI is, because there's so many different definitions out there, but also what are the key threats that it could sit behind, and also how AI systems themselves be attacked. And I think I'm not sure too many of the concepts have changed, but yeah, certainly the technology is speeding up in terms of how it develops. So yeah, it's a similar level of concern to a few years ago.
There's a lot more of it around, it feels like. It's definitely gone from one of those technologies that is in organizations to just everywhere. I think that's, you know, has that reminiscent of the dot-com days, and we explored a bit of that in that first podcast. But also here is Lee Munson, who is also a principal analyst at the ISF on research, and who formerly worked for McAfee and others tackling threats. Hello, Lee.
Hello, Mark. Or at least I assume it's Mark and not a deep voice or AI.
I'm glad you said that, because I did wonder if at some point we should try and do one of these with a deep fake me. But that might not be much fun, because who knows how easy I am to fake. Maybe I'm a very shallow personality. Who knows? But I did wonder, Lee, did you ever see any AI-driven malware or threats in your former work? Or was it a bit of a toy that the bad guys, they just had so many better methods of extracting cash from organizations, they didn't need to bother?
No, I didn't really see much use of AI. Most of the work I was involved in was to do with nation states. And they just had so many people at their disposal. That they didn't really need to utilize AI in their attacks. That said, that was a couple of years ago now. Things may well have changed in that space.
Yeah, they had actual intelligence rather than the artificial kind, I guess, to call on. But I suppose maybe that's where we should start with the bad guys, be they nation state actors or just the well-known cyber crime groups, because I did a bit of reading around and there's certainly some attacks that seem to be starting to be powered by AI and machine learning. I think, as you said, Richard, that making the hacker's life easier. Is that the sort of initial threat we're going to see, that this is a tool that bad guys might adopt because they're businessmen, essentially, and they just, like any online or software business these days, they need an edge, and AI and machine learning could give them that edge?
So I think for me, yes, I think if nothing else, it reduces the costs, it reduces the overheads, and anything you can do to you know, maximize your profits is clearly a thing that any operator that's acting as a business is going to look at.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, in terms of the capabilities right now, before we get into any more of the sci-fi stuff, AI tends to be good at ingesting large amounts of information, right, and learning from them. So doing fairly simple tasks, but, you know, at a scale that humans just can't manage. So I think, you know, we saw even back in 2019, and it's certainly developed since, that kind of looking around vulnerability identification. So just kind of doing some of that grunt work for the bad guys to start with, you know, so not necessarily doing the exploits, but going out and finding where the vulnerabilities are, can almost like kind of, if you think of it as a lead, almost a sales lead for a hacker, it could, just point them towards potential targets. So yeah, certainly seeing it being used in that sense.
Yeah, I would have thought as well with on the phishing side, because the tools we're seeing at the moment, ChatGPT and those large language models, they're really good at generating human type speech, conversations, text. And if that's convincing, then yeah, that's an easy way for the bad guys to push that production line.
You got to think of spear phishing and, you know, BEC type fraud, for instance, in business email compromise. I think, yeah, if you look at some of the examples of what ChatGPT's been doing, you know, writing poems in the style of a particular poet or songs in the style of another, there's no reason it can't write an email in the style of your boss. So it's going to make, you know, they're already pretty sophisticated, those spear phishing methods, but of course it's going to help those scale up, I guess, from an attacker's point of view. They'll be able to do it more regularly to more people.
Age-old problem of the phishing emails that are easy to spot due to the poor use of language.
Yeah, I mean, I did hear one analysis which suggested that the reason some of those are badly done is because they're aimed at people who aren't great at spelling and are more likely to fall victim to them. But equally, I think the more authentic they are, the more likely they are to get through, because people have all kinds of textual tics and idioms they use that identifies it as their kind of work. But I think that's definitely, I see that side of it. And then the social engineering side, I did hear about one attack, which is taking audio and this is via phone, I think, and trying to trick people into convincing them that a relative or someone they know is in trouble and needs help. I mean, that's pretty insidious. So I guess it's only going to get better as well. I mean, the problem with these things, they get better very quickly.
You've got that phishing side of things. And also, of course, as we start to get better, deepfake technology might start adding video to that. So you could have a Teams call with someone who looks and sounds like the boss or some, you know, another stakeholder. I'm still not completely sold on that as being a massive threat right now, in terms of the video side, at least, because it's still, most of the time, you can identify there's still that uncanny valley, right? It's still being able to identify when something isn't as it seems, especially done in real time. I think you see a lot of these recordings on various, YouTube channels, etc., of someone faking, you know, the Tom Cruise deepfakes are pretty popular, for instance, but they're pre-recorded, right? They're not having a live conversation with you over a screen. I think that's the difference at the moment. So yeah, but certainly voice messages are easier to impersonate and definitely email.
Yeah, Rob, you were shaking your head there. So you agree that you think the video side is probably not going to be the route the bad guys go?
So I think, today, no. I mean, there's certainly, as you're saying, pre-recorded, that seems to work fairly well when the effort's been put in. But I think the two challenges there, one is that the level of equipment and the level of source material you need to make that convincing is quite high. So, it's not the kind of thing that's going to be used against random people for the, hey, I'm your son, daughter, relative, whatever, I need money. But I think as well, it's give it 2 years, give it 5 years when the technology to do that is cheaper, is faster, is more accessible. I mean, look at what you can do with your mobile phone these days. You know, click on people in the background of your picture and bingo, they're gone. I think that march of technology is going to make that more accessible, more cost effective.
Yeah, and like I say, that's why the bad guys want this, isn't it? It's a technology tool that they can use. But I think, I mean, you brought up another point in the chat we had just before the we started recording, which was about using machine learning for data mining. And I guess that, you know, that's the one thing we have seen the bad guys do is amass huge amounts of data about targets. So, I mean, do you think that's where it could really help making their lives easier, unfortunately?
I think it has the potential to make anybody's life easier. You know, if you've got large quantities of data you want to distill down, then, you know, using humans to do that is inefficient. If nothing else, we get bored easily. Computers don't. So being able to use tools to trawl large amounts of data, summarize it, highlight things that you classify as interesting, or that they may think then is interesting based off the cues you've given, that has great potential.
Yeah, I just wonder, Lee, I don't know if you can comment on just how rampant competition is amongst the cybercrime groups. I don't know if they all try and pile into the same space, or that they're all looking for an edge, I suppose. I mean, that's what's going to drive their use of this. Is it actually going to be useful?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, of course, they're criminals, but they're also businesses, as you say. And, you know, everyone wants to come out on top. Whoever's got the best malware, whoever can get the most data on their targets is going to win effectively. You know, back in my threat intel days, we've seen source code where there's been messages left about other cybercrime groups as well. They're very competitive.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine that, yeah, that is going to, if they can use it, because I think there are, I've seen some of the language models starting to be used on, traded in, on the dark web, and they can run on some pretty light hardware as well. So it's not like these things you need a ChatGPT account to use them. And I'm sure the bad guys have their own. Who knows what they're developing as well. But I just wonder if we can move on to some of the other threats it poses, perhaps by in the way that organizations use it. Because the conversation we had last week in looking at the future of the technology, one of the problems that emerged was that sometimes it just doesn't work very well, and that the models you develop just don't work, you know, don't do what you expect them to when you get to put them into production. I just wonder, is that going to be the, I don't know, Rob, have you looked at this particularly, just the data you're gathering and then building into your model, is that the place you're going to have to do a lot of work to make sure it's right?
Yeah, and it's certainly a topic that we're looking at and have been discussing in terms of, yeah, you take, as you say, you take your data, you put it through the model, yeah, your small subset of data gives you your expected output, all is happy. You give it your much larger, much messier set of data, are you still going to get the outputs you're expecting it to give you? And how can you validate that? And when the only thing you've got to validate the model is the model itself, it's an interesting challenge.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of organisations are confronting that. It's sort of, is how good is our data? Like, I mean, I guess a lot of organisations think they're very rich in data, but it could be quite low quality data, unfortunately.
And I would imagine this is probably one that researchers have had to tackle in terms of, you know, analysing large volumes of data, and it's probably a case that we can learn from some of the work they've done.
Yeah, but it does seem quite a new area of data science. Sort of, I don't know if it's data honesty, purity, I'm not sure what it'd be, or whether it's the integrity aspect of the CIA triad, but or whether it's, yeah, I'm not sure if it's a new thing we need to add to that.
Certainly, it's a really complicated part of the integrity aspect, I think, of CIA, especially if you think about how big data is used in AI. It's often used in real time or very, very quickly. So, you know, having, and there's so much of it, it's hard to check the integrity. So I think there's a real big issue for businesses here and those that are using them. If you're using AI to use big data to make split second decisions, how do you keep a track of the integrity of that? You know, and it become, you know, it's, attackers can then, if he's looking to do damage to a business, or not to a business, you know, this, we could be talking about critical infrastructure or government departments, you know, bearing in mind it's likely state actors that are going to be getting involved in this kind of threat. You know, poisoning data sets and just kind of tweaking bits of, you know, the data can then have a massive impact further down the line in terms of, you know, poor outcomes from the systems that are using them.
Yeah, because I imagine that sort of one of the long-term threats for this could be that it looks good, but a year down the line, you suddenly realize you've committed your business to a strategy that really isn't playing out. And then how do you change? Because you've invested so much in changing everything to match what the model said should happen and didn't.
And worse for AI, you don't even know how it came to that decision a lot of the time, because if you don't know exactly how the AI is making its decision. I think some of the scariest stuff that, you know, I saw coming through was talking about AI systems that basically form their own type of encryption to communicate with each other. And, you know, their programmers had no idea how that happened. So now, you know, you've got intelligent systems that are able to communicate without any understanding from their initial creator or programmer in the first place. How do you understand the decisions they're making? It's a really thorny one.
Yeah, it's a big problem with those models you're building as well. You can see the outputs, but how did they get there? We don't know. And then I think but regulators might start posing very difficult questions. Well, you need to understand that, because if you're, because I think that's the where I suppose some of the big danger comes in here, is just that this affects real people. I mean, it's not just making, I mean, admittedly, making a website, a blog or something like that, that can harm people's lives for sure. But there could be enormous organizations, governments committing themselves to technologies that we just don't know how they work. That's quite dangerous, isn't it? To ask you all a very big question.
Well, one thing we do know about AI, of course, is there's that big risk of bias entering the equation as well. There was a bot recently, and I can't remember who made it. I think was it Google? That proved itself to be quite racist within 24 hours.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the interesting and depressing side of things, is that people saying, all this data is full of bias. And it's like, yeah, where have you been living? You know, society is biased, unfortunately. And equally, having talked to some researchers who look at these kind of things, said, well, you don't want to eliminate bias, because surely part of running a business is knowing which customers want your stuff. And that's biased in and of itself. But equally, I take the point that, sure, it shouldn't be disadvantaging people unnecessarily.
I think it depends what the system's designed to do. The notorious one is recruitment, firms, and that you could see, because they're based on historic data sets of the type of person that an organization recruits, if there's been bias built in there, it will be propagated by the algorithm, by the AI. So rubbish in, rubbish out is forever been the saying in IT, and it absolutely applies to AI, except kind of on steroids. It's just happening a lot faster.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, it's worth remembering definitely what AI is. I mean, there is that view of AI as this sort of benevolent abstract cloud of computer power, but it's not. It's like you say, it's rooted in the real world, and it will have real world consequences. I think that does distinguish it, and perhaps brings to mind some of those problems. But I suppose that's what we should talk about as another threat for organizations, is about when it does go wrong. When if you do disadvantage people as a result of this, I mean, that organization set up to that? Because again, if you get lots of people coming back to you and saying, this has damaged my life, what do you do?
We're going to have to go and employ the lawyers. in terms of liability, I had some really interesting discussions with this. We're thinking the classic example here is self-driving cars, right? They're pretty much entirely based on AI. There are all various different AI systems that are learning. What happens when... Yeah, when there's an accident, or heaven forbid, someone's killed by an AI or an automated vehicle, is the programmer of the AI responsible? Are they liable? Is it the car maker? Where does that liability sit? I'm not sure we've actually seen that tested. On the flip side of that, of course, that's the horror story that everyone likes to talk around automated vehicles. I think statistically they're also a lot safer than those driven by people. So maybe you've got to kind of it's that balance between the positive and the negative that you have to keep looking at around AI. There's some really interesting use cases there that are going to improve the world, hopefully, but with some pretty thorny downsides.
I think so. I think with the early responsibility for some of those problems with automated cars was throw it back to the driver, suddenly hand over to the driver and say, well, the driver crashed because the computer wasn't in charge for those few milliseconds before they had the impact or something like that, which is not sure that solves the problem really. But I just wonder, I mean, again, sort of point you brought up, Rob, maybe this is what we start to close on, is just if you're using these to help you defend yourself, I guess if you're committing to automated systems, I guess the long term is, how do you know that it's doing the right kind of job?
Yeah, and I think at this point in time, I'm not sure that anybody has an answer to that, other than, you're still going to need your experienced intrusion analysts to go and check and see what the system found, see what the system didn't find. You can use your new learning to feed back into the system so it spots that in the future. But at the moment, computers are still not great at spotting the new, the novel. And that's where the humans are going to probably for a long time remain as kind of our subject matter experts.
Yeah, I think it's going to be ideally these systems will be used by people rather than doing things to people. I don't know, Lee, did you ever I don't know if you were the tools you used, was it very manual what you did, or were you starting to develop some automated systems as well that would help with those, that threat intelligence and management?
There was probably a healthy mix of the two, to be honest. Automated tools are good at spotting trends, but you always need a human on the end. And that sort of highlights another risk here, isn't it? If you use AI to replace human researchers, you're going to miss details because, as Rob said, the computers can't spot everything that's new. They can only spot what they've been trained to spot.
Yeah, I think that's, certainly having read around sort of how they work, they're, like say, great at pattern recognition and great at the things they know. And it's the exceptions sometimes that make a human go, hang on. And then you get the insight, and then you get the uncover something that a bigger threat, perhaps. But I think one thing that did occur to me was there's a question of authenticity here as well. Sort of how do you, how do you know the AI is doing the right kind of thing? But because I read about a case of a student who was accused of using AI to write an essay, and he claims he didn't use any AI. So do we need? Is that where we're going? Just you need to prove you're human, and what you did was human enough. But a difficult question, ultimate Turing test, I suppose. I did this all by myself. No AI tools were used in the production of this. Who knows what?
You may need an AI marking system to work out whether something's been AI generated.
What could possibly go wrong with that?
Programs, hacking programs. It's to be honest, it's an arms race, and the same applies in information security. I think as AI starts being used more for attacking offensive purposes, you're going to have AI based defenses as the only things that will be able to kind of keep track with that pace and scale. So it's probably the same for universities. They might have to start giving their lecturers and professors access to some kind of AI system that's able to check whether an essay handed in has the traits of being generated by someone not other than its author. Or maybe someone who sets an essay should ask GPT to write one first, answering that question, and then
use that to calibrate.
Yeah, see just how similar some of the answers coming in are.
Yeah, but I've seen some lecturers who start to use ChatGPT and encourage people to do it, because there is that new job category turning up, prompt engineer, someone who can get the best out of an AI or large language model or something like that. So. Yeah, I think it's, who knows how it's going to develop, but I think there's so much fire and fury around it. Yeah, it's doubtless it's going to have a big impact. Sorry, Lee, you were about to say something.
I was going to say, if you are falsely accused of plagiarism, be careful about the lawyer you employ, because a news story yesterday in which an AI lawyer in the US, I believe, was sued because it hadn't passed the bar exam.
Yeah, I've written stories about that before. Yeah, practicing law without a license. Yeah, which is a great one. But ChatGPT has passed the bar exam, so you can't get it can be done. The AI systems can do that, can get a passing grade. But yeah, I think that does seem like a old man shakes fist at cloud, isn't it? Sort of just, the technology is catching out a group of people, lawyers, that might, because I think the system in that case was automated the practice of challenging parking tickets or speeding fines or something like that, and was doing a really good job. Whether that is taking money out of the mouths of lawyers out of the purses of lawyers, I don't know. But an interesting use case for sure. But just to close on the bigger issues, can we speculate wildly about where we'll be in a few years' time and AI and things like that? Because there was, I don't know if you know Stephen Wolfram, who's a bit of a scientific authority, and he wrote an opinion piece the other day. Headline was, "Will AI take our jobs and end human history? It's complicated." And however you read that, that's not quite a no. So I just want to Richard, do you think you're going to be put out of a job? Can these large language models do what you do? I would like to say no, because, this... I'm not as good at my job as you are. So if you can't, you haven't got a job, I haven't either.
I think you're certainly a better writer. So yeah, actually, there's... I'd like to say no, but I can't. Because it's one of those things, if you think objectively about it, if you look at the pace of change that's happened with AI, things have sped up so quickly, it's not really a threat right now. But within a few years, the pace it's moving, potentially. I think there's a wider point here. Like every technology revolution that comes along, there are losers, there are winners and losers. And it's all about, kind of getting people upskilled to work alongside machines, rather than against them or being replaced by them. But there's always... there's always been a lag, going back centuries, go back to the Industrial Revolution, the time it took to reskill the workforce. But just think about the pace this is moving now. I think there are going to be major societal issues around people not being able to keep up with it. So it might be, there's some other theories I've seen as well in terms of, things, if you've got exponential growth, what doesn't seem an issue now will be taking over the world in 4 years because it's just on our kind of radars right now. But if it doubles in pace and capability every year, then very shortly, it takes over completely. It does things that you have no idea it could do. So I'm loath to kind of jump on the bandwagon and say it's going to end everything. But at the same time, there's no real telling when things move this quickly.
Yeah, I did see there was a website which is not too frivolous, but it seems to put some rigor behind its predictions, which crowdsources views from all kinds of people on various technological issues, and its estimate of when we'll get that artificial general intelligence, the sort of super brain that will be authentically human, has shrunk considerably over the last few months. So now I think it's 2036, it's shrunk to, and it was only sort of 6 months ago, it's 2045. So I think it's sort of, people are being speculating that this stuff is moving so fast. But no, Rob, are you worried about what you do, or again, are you sort of, these are tools to use, and the people who will prosper will be able to use the tools the best?
I think some parts of any job are inevitably at risk, but I mean, pragmatically, the moment is largely about automation. It's about streamlining. Those are things that have been going on in technology forever. If the AI can take away some of the boring parts of the job and allow people to do the more interesting, the more challenging bits, then that should be a good thing. I think the challenge is that for some people, the boring parts of the jobs are the only bits that they know how to do. So back to the previous comment, how do we upskill people? How do we ensure that they don't get left at the wayside as technology marches on?
Yeah, I think that's true. But equally, I think there's an interesting gap emerging in terms of what AI robots can do. I'm surprised there aren't more robot cleaners, because you'd think that sort of basic job would be pretty straightforward, but it turns out it's not. I mean, I think it's one of those weird contradictions that there's some things AI is good at that humans are bad at, and the reverse is true as well. It's an interesting point. Lee, for you, I don't know, are you particularly worried? Are we doomed? Should we run for the hills with those doomsday preppers all right?
Am I personally worried? Not particularly. I do fear for some people, though. I think AI will take tens, maybe even hundreds of millions of jobs away over the next 5 years. It'll create a similar number as well, but there'll be high-skilled jobs. So people who are working in jobs that are easily automated, they're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I mean, I have heard people say in the past, it's not a revolution if nobody gets hurt. And I think we're all saying that, at some point in the near future, some people are going to be hurting because, it's a big technological change. And there is a lot of, you can see all kinds of ways that it might be used and abused. So, I think we're a few years of perhaps trouble and pain ahead of us. And perhaps we'll end on that lovely note, just to very not quite so upbeat as perhaps we wanted to. But many thanks for listening. Tell your friends, the ISF Analyst Insight podcast are now available on all major podcast platforms. Look at the show notes for our page on Audioboom, where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn much more about ISF research tools and guidance.